The president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document, which he was sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
We do have secret prisons. That is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Karl Marx penned his manifesto at the age of 30. Thomas Jefferson wrote his Declaration of Independence at age 33. And at age 34, the Republican candidate for governor of Virginia, Bob McDonnell, penned his own manifesto entitled The Republican Party's Vision for the Family, The Compelling Issue of the Decade. He did it as a thesis for the Christian Broadcasting Network University, the one founded by televangelist Pat Robertson, a university today called Regents University that wasn't even accredited at the time he went there. It is accredited now and has the lowest ranking, tied for lowest ranking, of any law school in the United States. Why does it matter what Bob McDonnell wrote in 1989 when George Bush Sr. was president? Well, because there's an election in Virginia in a month and a half, and Bob McDonnell's views as expressed in this thesis, even though he denies a lot of them today, have in many ways formed the legislative backbone of what he's done over the last 18 years. I'll be discussing this and something else. Also, I want to talk about other strange Republican wild ideas and outbursts, including that of Joe Wilson of South Carolina, the man who shouted out, "You lie," during President Obama's health care speech to Congress, and other crazy, radical Republican ideas, things like that Obama wasn't born in the United States, or that compare him to the Nazis, or all kinds of radical ideas that seem to be embraced, even if put a little distance, by the mainstream Republican Party. To answer these very difficult charges, I've invited a common guest here on the Inside Scoop. His name is Mike Lane. He's Republican strategist in the state of Virginia. Mike, welcome again to the show.
Mark, thank you. I resent being called common, but we'll fight that out.
You may resent some other things I'm going to say today, but they're not personally toward you. They are, however, directed at your party. Let me start with the thesis, which we could show up on the screen behind me. It's titled The Republican Party's Vision for the Family, The Compelling Issue of the Decade. Submitted by Robert McDonnell for the Christian Broadcasting Network University. This thesis, of course, was unearthed by the Washington Post, not because they were doing negative research on Robert McDonnell, but because he invited them to look at it. He said, "Oh, you want to check out my thesis on welfare policy? Go, please check it out." And reporters did, and they found things in there that, I think surprised a lot of people who thought that Bob McDonnell had moderated his views. Let's show some of the most interesting parts of this thesis. One is that Bob McDonnell decries the decision in Griswold v. Connecticut. Now, you may not know what that means, but that is a decision by the United States Supreme Court in 1965 that said that the state cannot ban contraception. As he wrote, and this is a direct quote from his thesis on page 7, you can show it up there on the screen. The United States Supreme Court dealt among the harshest blows to the American family and traditional morality. He says that in 1965, with Griswold v. Connecticut, that the court postulated a new view of marriage by asserting that the preservation of marital privacy precludes state interference with the right to use contraceptives, even though the state had long been empowered to regulate the legal and sexual relationships of marriage. He goes on to argue that that is important, that the state should regulate the legal and sexual relationships of marriage. And I have to say that he has not only said this 20 years ago, but he's put his policy where his mouth is. Most recently, in 2003, there was a woman that applied to be a judge in Virginia.
And being re-elected to a judge.
Being re-elected to a judgeship. And he felt that she should not be. If she violated Virginia law against having oral sex. Now, as I'm sure you're aware, until the United States Supreme Court struck it down in Lawrence v. Texas, the state of Virginia banned oral sex, even between marital couples. And Bob McDonnell argues that that is absolutely the right and province of the state to ban oral sex between marital couples because, as he puts it, and this is on page 11 of the thesis, as he puts it, respect for the rule of law over private morality and custom has been central in the history of Western civilization. So he goes on to say that that American law can regulate sexual activity, including private sexual activity. These views, I don't think, are standard in the state of Virginia today, even though there was a law in Virginia back in 2003. Do you think Bob McDonald still believes this? Because I haven't heard him precisely discount it. He says, the thesis was 20 years ago. But I've never heard him say that he doesn't think that the state can regulate private sexual behavior.
Well, the first thing, Mark, is like his opponent, who describes himself as a work in progress on many of the important issues, Bob McDonald uses the exact same words. He says he's a work in progress. Now, you have to, first of all, back when Griswold was decided, it was very controversial. In fact, it went against conventional mainstream American thought at the time. The Supreme Court was cutting very new ground on that kind of stuff. Now, when you look at it in the context of what Attorney General McDonald wrote back in his college days when he was doing his thesis, number one, keep in mind it was an academic environment. He was writing a thesis for purposes of being provocative and stretching the limits of what, you know, thoughts should be, etc. The second thing is his real job in the world, as he was a part-time student, his real job was as an employee of the House Republican Study Committee, which I think most of our viewers would know is the think tank arm of the House Republican Caucus, which gives people, it's sort of an incubator of ideas where you can sit there and maybe throw 300 ideas up against the wall and see if maybe one or two of them stick and are rational and are good or something like that. So this is the environment in which he was operating both professionally and academically. When asked about this, he held two extensive press conferences, answered every question that every reporter ever had, said that he has moved on these things, and that in reality he has an 18-year record in public office of being elected and representing Virginians, and he would point to that as the real issues in this campaign.
Well, let me respond to a few things. First of all, his college days existed apparently when he was 34 years old.
Oh, he went back to law school. Right,
exactly.
Not everybody goes to school right after college.
I understand that. I'm not criticizing him for it, but to argue his college days as if this might reflect the views of some, you know, high school student or 18-year-old, this is a 34-year-old. As I pointed out, Karl Marx and Thomas Jefferson had already written their greatest pieces by the time they were 30 and 33. I think at 34, most people's political views are pretty well set.
No, I don't think so.
Well, in any case, he hasn't explained exactly how his views have progressed since then. I'll give you an example. In the piece, he decries working women. He says, in fact, that, and I could get the exact quote, that women who work are achieving their own. I'm going to get the exact quote because I don't want to misquote him or be accused of misquoting him. It is right here in the Republican vision of family policy. Let me get it right here. Okay, it's on page 39 and 40 of his thesis. I've tried to take careful notes. I want you to know I've read all 99 pages of this. And I tried to be very careful.
This is too much.
Very careful to hold in my lunch and as I read it. It goes on to say, this is a direct quote right here, that fostered by no-fault divorce and the private choices of individuals to increase their family income, or for some women to break their perceived stereotypical role bonds and seek workplace and equality and individual self-actualization. Now, many of us might think that's a good thing for women to seek workplace equality and individual self-actualization. Not Bob McDonald. He says, quote, must government subsidize the choices of a generation with an increased appetite for the materialistic components of the American dream? He goes on to say, in talking about working women, that, it's down here, I think. Let's find it.
Well, first of all, what are you looking for, Mark? Let me comment
here,
on that.
Here it is. Here it is. He doesn't want expenditures used to subsidize a dynamic new trend of working women and feminists that is ultimately detrimental to the family. Here's the thing about working women. You could say his views have changed, and in fact, he says, specifically on working women, he doesn't talk about his views on banning private sexual conduct or contraception. He hasn't talked about that. On working women, he says his views have changed, that he has a daughter and a wife that works. He's cool with that now. And yet in 2001, this is not 20 years ago, but 8 years ago, there was a resolution in the Virginia State House that would have supported pay parity for women, and Bob McDonald voted against it. He actually supports women being paid less than men, which is something that I haven't heard anybody from either party ever support.
Okay, well, I'm glad that you admit that, you know, that things have moved on, and that what he wrote in an academic atmosphere more than 20 years ago is not what is reflective of his record. In fact, his record is very strong on working women. Let's talk about, you mentioned his daughter and his wife, both of who are professionals and have jobs. His daughter actually joined the Army and went to Iraq and served for 13 months in Iraq as a platoon commander. I think that shows a fairly strong demonstration of a commitment to the profile of the strong working woman.
By her, certainly. I don't know if it does by him. You know, sometimes daughters don't do what their fathers want them to do.
I think the part, well, since Bob was a career Army guy himself, I think that following in his career Army footsteps was something of which he was eminently proud that his daughter chose to do.
I give her a lot of
credit.
And
she deserves a lot of credit. And
absolutely.
She's a fine young woman.
I have no problem with her.
I happen to know her personally.
I'm sure she's wonderful. Her father, however, voted against
what
pay parity.
What you read there was not outside of mainstream political debate, even back when it was written. Now, it may be that it's not part of mainstream debate today, but 21 years ago, and certainly back before that, it was part of mainstream thought. And so let's take it up into the current and look at what Bob McDonald has done. His single biggest achievement legislatively in the General Assembly was he wrote and carried the law that updated welfare reform in the United States, a law that passed Virginia in 1993 and ultimately became the model law for the country, which is what the Congress based theirs on in 1994 and which President Bill Clinton signed into law. It was essentially Bob McDonald's bill. And what did it do? It created subsidies for child care and things like that so that women who needed careers could go out and get the training so that their kids would be taken care of.
That wasn't McDonald's idea.
That was Bob McDonald.
He carried that legislation.
Bob McDonald sponsored that legislation, carried it through the Virginia General Assembly in 1993.
Well, but Bob McDonald has argued that no one should be able to help women work there. That he needs to
a decades-old academic paper.
You know,
let's look at his record and what he's done.
Decades old. You talk about Griswold. Griswold was passed in 1965.
Right.
This was written in 1989. 24 years later, after the Supreme Court said, you know what, the government has no business regulating private sexual conduct, you had Bob McDonald saying, yeah, the government should control what we do in our own bedrooms. And in 2003, willing to say a woman shouldn't be a judge because she'd had oral sex. Let's take a break. Let's give our callers a chance to join in. 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
Around the world, one out of every three women will be beaten or otherwise abused in their lifetime.
I stopped at zero. Okay.
Often by a family member or loved one. A future free from violence. It's all she's ever wished for.
Did you know you have the power to stop children from joining gangs? You can help a father find a job and home for his family. You can assist a woman who can't afford the medicine she needs to live and the home she can't live without. You can choose to make a difference in our community. Support Volunteers of America, and you can help improve the lives of nearly 2 million Americans each year with programs and services that help individuals and families overcome their challenges to become as independent as possible. Support the programs that are working in our community. Contact Volunteers of America today. Call 1-800-899-0089.
For some folks, saving for the future is easy, but for you, it might take a little more effort. Saving for your future is your responsibility, and there's a lot to save for.
I never thought of that.
Like the child's education, perhaps uncovered medical expenses, or just to be sure you can live the way you want when you retire. The time is now to save for tomorrow. Save now or work forever. The choice is yours. Choose to save.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. There is an election in Virginia for governor. Did you know that? It's just 6 weeks away, just around the corner at the beginning of November. The main Republican candidate is Bob McDonnell. The main Democratic candidate is Craig Deeds. And some of what Robert McDonnell wrote when he was 34 years old in 1989 is coming to light, including the fact that he felt that the government should be able to regulate private sexual conduct. Mike, you said that. This is my guest, Mike Lane, Republican strategist. You had a correction you wanted to give.
I did. I said that McDonald sponsored his welfare reform law in 1993 and that nationally it was done in 1994 and Bill Clinton signed it into law. It should have been 1995 by McDonald in the Virginia General Assembly and nationally in 1996.
Fair enough. One thing about that that has come to light is one of the things that Bob McDonald opposed very much in that child welfare law is regulating when churches provide child care services. The government, when it provides child care services, generally regulates to make sure that they are qualified, that the children are not being abused, that they are being treated well, that they get basic health care and food and things like that. McDonald did not think, and this, by the way, is very true to his thesis. He did not think the government should have any role, even when providing money to churches, in regulating their conduct to make sure that they provide decent health care. And in fact, that's one of the things that he put in that law.
Well, you know, Mark, of all the things in all the world to be concerned about, that would, to me, be the least of it for you. It's not exactly outside the realm of real political, mainstream political thought today that government regulates church activities, even government-funded church activities, too much. I know that Democrats, for the most part, want to remove any government funding of church activities. But what you're doing there, I mean, I don't know Bob's up-to-the-minute view on that particular thing, but I personally would defend that the government spends too much time regulating church activities, and they ought not to be in that thing.
Well, how about if you and I agree, Mike, that the government shouldn't be funding church activities? Church activities should be funded by churches, but then where government does fund church activities, which I'm completely opposed to, but if they have to do it, at the very least, they should make sure they meet minimum standards. You must know, Mike, of these awful churches, you must have heard of them, where they do things like have rebirthing procedures, horrible things where they literally take a person who wants to be reborn and they physically almost smother the person. Usually they're a teenager. Sometimes they've died in this procedure. It's abusive behavior. I realize the vast majority of churches don't do this kind of thing. But if you don't have minimal regulations, you can get all kind of wackos that call themselves a church that actually cause child abuse.
Well, the specific example that you cite, I don't know of anything personally that actually was like that. If there's something that's like that, it's way outside the mainstream.
It is outside the mainstream. That's why you need regulation.
But it sounds like it's criminal activity to me.
It is, and it was.
And so it can be prosecuted based on that. You don't need to have the government interfering with the way they would conduct a child care class for parents or the way they would conduct a child care center. To me, that's you know, the next thing, when you have the government doing that, the next thing you're going to do is you're going to have the government tell what kind of religion they can teach in their child care center, even though it's a church-sponsored child care center, and I'm just, you know, very uncomfortable with the government regulating religion.
Let me tell you something.
We have a constitutional amendment that prohibits that.
Absolutely, which is why churches, if they don't want government interference, shouldn't accept government money. Separation of church and state. It's something, of course, the wall of separation in church and state that Thomas Jefferson wrote but Bob McDonald doesn't believe in the separation of church and state. He writes in his thesis against it. And I'll find that in a second.
I doubt he doesn't believe in the separation of church and state, or I doubt he doesn't believe in the First Amendment, which says that government shall not prescribe a religion for the country. It does not say anything about a separation of church and state. That's a misnomer fallacy that liberal progressives have been touting for 50 years that doesn't exist.
Well, it's what Thomas Jefferson wrote, and here is Bob McDonald, specifically right here. This is at the bottom of page 62, and Bob McDonald, this is not quoting anyone, he's just quoting himself. He says, with the new Republican administration under George Bush and a conservative-leaning court, leaders must correct the conventional folklore about the separation of church and state. Historically, the religious liberty guarantees of the First Amendment, Bob McDonald writes, were intended to prevent government encroachment upon the free church, not eliminate the impact of religion on society. Therefore, government at all levels must help create the legal and financial conditions to unleash the power of the church. What he's saying, in effect, is that government can fund churches.
I think you can't fund churches. You can fund specific programs like a child care center.
That's right.
But I don't think you ought to be funding churches, and I don't think
funding a church program and funding a church? It's money's fungible.
No, you can keep separate accounts, and you can make sure
separate accounts, and then the government has the right to regulate with regard to those separate accounts.
But it shouldn't be.
What do you mean?
I know with money does come strings. I understand that.
Government does
often there should
the
not be.
We're going to give money for this highway and not this highway. We're going to give money for this program and not this program. We're going to give money to a child care center, but only if it provides.
And by the way, if we build that highway, then you're going to have to license drivers under these circumstances,
right.
And you're going to have to pass these
driving laws. That's
and
what government regulation
like that.
Is. Now, I guess you're opposed
and
to
don't,
all
and don't we? No, I'm not opposed to all of it, but I'm opposed to 80% of it. It's it's foolish. The government just is doing too much stuff.
Let me read you more.
In fact, why don't we agree on this, Mark, that the federal government just spends too much money and that all this money ought to be delivered back to the people in terms of tax cuts, and then the states can retax their people and do with it as they choose. That would be the original way federalism was intended.
I think it depends on each individual program. I know one, for example, that Republicans really hate and fought against from the beginning was Social Security. They also fought against Medicare. They hate these federal programs. But I got news for you, Mike. Most people who get Social Security and Medicare actually like the program, even though it's funded by the federal government, not by the states. And they're going to like Obama's health care program, too, when it comes.
Well, the polls don't show that, but,
It hasn't happened yet. They don't know what to expect yet. It hasn't happened yet.
But because
Medicare and Social Security were controversial,
even though he made his defining speech last Wednesday night, we still don't know what the president's bottom line is. In fact, he himself took to the well of the House to give his speech and said, now, there are still so many details yet to be worked out, and even the Democrats laughed at him when he gave that line.
Actually, what he said is that we've already agreed on 80%. And there's about 20% left to be understood.
No, he said there's a lot of details still to be worked out.
They're very small. We'll get to those in a minute. Let me finish Bob McDonald first,
right.
Because I want to show more from this thesis. He says some really shocking stuff, I think, for a 34-year-old. He goes on to say, and this is on page 9 of his thesis, very interesting. He says that he talks about that the Supreme Court case ending in 1979, the view of marriage as an indissoluble, lifelong commitment had been abandoned. In its wake is the perverted notion of liberty, that each individual should be able to live out his sexual life in any way he chooses without interference from the state.
Mm-hmm.
He considers that perverted.
Well, Mark, we still have laws against certain sexual activity.
That involve sex with children.
Yeah. So we have laws.
But that's
so the
not
question
what he's talking
is
what, about.
It is what he's talking about. In fact, it covers the whole gamut. There is no limitation on that.
Well, but he gives an example. His example is Griswold. His example is
right.
Virginia law that bans oral sex.
And look,
these aren't bestiality. These aren't sex with children.
And we already knew that up until the Texas case of, what was it, 5-6 years ago. It was generally acceptable state practice. The states had the right to legislate in these areas.
Right, and he argues that it still should be. I mean, that's...
No, he argued more than two decades ago, Mark.
I
he
have not
argue it
heard
today.
Him... I'd love for you to show me. You have a computer there. We can do it during the break, where he has recanted these views. He has recanted the working women views. I'll grant you that. He has not recanted the views that the government has the right to regulate private sexual morality. If you see it, show it to me, because I'd like to see it.
Well, he has said that it's a work in progress. His thinking on these things. He has said that this is a 21-year-old academic paper written in a wholly different political and academic environment. And he says, I have an 18-year record. Let's judge me on this. And he has not sponsored any laws that would cause you for concern on that kind of stuff.
Well, for one thing, the Supreme Court says he can't pass any of these laws.
Well, not only in the last 5 years.
You're right.
He has a 13-year record before that.
According to the Washington Post, of the 15 points of action,
you should really find a much better source than the Washington Post.
Well, we can go through them if you want, piece by piece. But according to the Washington Post, according to the very same reporter that discovered the thesis that he pointed to her, of the 15 points of action, he's already proposed or supported bills for 10 of them. So okay. It's not like these 15 things are way some kind
you're
of
right.
academic exercise. Two-thirds of them he's already acted to put into law.
You're right. He did support a ban on partial birth abortion in the Virginia legislature,
yes.
which passed. And interestingly enough, his opponent for governor this year supports partial birth abortion.
In cases where the woman's health or life is in danger.
Mark, you know, there is no definition on that. The AMA has gone on record.
Where a woman's health or life is in danger?
For a partial birth abortion, there is not a single case where a woman's life would be in jeopardy and the need for a partial... The AMA
That's
is on,
not true
on
at
record.
All.
No, the AMA is on
Mike,
record.
Mike, that is
this
absolutely
one. It absolutely
false.
Is. Not a single case on record.
That's simply false.
And so the only thing we can conclude...
Partial birth abortions, the great majority are done because of
women's health.
In fact, because otherwise a woman would have it in the first 3 months.
You know
partial
what?
Birth
no.
abortions, which by the way, is I understand it's a confusing term because it's one created by the right. They the people who do these, the doctors who do these call it dilation and extraction. And so if that's the procedure you're talking about, dilation and extraction is almost invariably done because of a woman's health.
I'm talking about a particularly gruesome procedure that the AMA is on record as saying that a woman's health is not at issue in this particular thing.
Never
this is
at issue?
This is someone who just decided at the end.
You're going to have to show
you know,
me where the AMA says it's never at issue. Because,
I'll find that for
because
you.
Because these abortions are very rare. And my understanding
well, you know
is
what?
The vast majority of them are done solely protect a woman's health. Why would a woman want an abortion at 7-8 months? Most women who want abortions
because,
want it as soon as possible.
Because they're irresponsible.
They only want it because of their health.
Because they're irresponsible
Blame
and
the
they
woman.
Freak out. No, Mark, in this particular case, look, anybody can make a mistake, but when you sit there and you think about it for 7-8 months and with 2 weeks left to go, you have labor induced, and as the baby is coming down the birth canal, you take scissors and you snap them right into the brain stem and snap it in half.
Because
killing,
otherwise the woman
killing,
might die?
Killing,
that makes sense.
Killing the baby when it's halfway, you know, delivered out of the womb and then, you know, this is a particularly gruesome, ghoulish procedure that ought to be outlawed and Cree Deeds thinks it should be legal and
when the woman
people
health
of
is
Virginia,
in danger.
The people
Mike,
of Virginia don't believe that.
Let me tell you something. I used to work for Congressman Barney Frank. Barney Frank is
My condolences on
well
that.
Known as a liberal. No one would ever doubt that Congressman
right.
Frank is a liberal. Congressman Frank is on record and has been on record for decades that he is willing to ban this procedure as long as there are protections when a woman's health or life is in danger.
Okay.
The Republicans have insisted that when a woman's health or life is in danger, you still
Mark.
Can't do it. Democrats, including Cree Deeds, support the woman. If
how
you allow a protection for her health, Cree Deeds would be okay.
How is this used? What is usually used is the doctor discusses it with the woman. She says, oh, I'm going crazy. I can't deal with this. He says, for the mental health of the woman, we need
not
to do
true.
This, and
not
it happens.
That's could,
the way
you,
it's
you
invoked.
You could make it a lifelong physical harm, and liberals would support it. The problem is that, as usual, Republicans put a fetus above a living woman. You want to call in 888-488-MARK? We'll be right back.
I helped turn my child's public school into a whole new kind of school. One with a curriculum that really motivates kids. One that has extended hours, 6 days a week, year-round. With loads of academic, cultural, and recreational activities. One that has support services, like medical and dental, right there. A school where parents' involvement is encouraged. Where teachers have more time to teach. And students are excited about learning. There's just one problem. My child doesn't ever want to come home. You can help turn your school into a community school for excellence. Find out how. Call 1-877-LOVE-TO-LEARN.
It's coming. Right to your neighborhood. And when it does, you may be surprised. It's your Social Security statement of your benefits, and it's going to help you plan your financial future. Your benefit statement will tell you how much Social Security you're eligible to receive and when you'll get it. Then, you'll know how much you need to save for retirement, because that's coming too. The future is in your hands. Choose to save.
The toxic fumes from this meth lab are seeping into Jamie's sinus cavity. Ammonia vapors invade her throat. Toxic gases fill her lungs. Jamie's body is deteriorating. And she doesn't even know it.
Jamie? Dinner.
So, who has the drug problem now? Find out how meth affects you at drugfree.org/meth.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the thesis of the Republican candidate for governor in Virginia, Bob McDonnell. I've already read to you from some of it. For example, you can look right here. And I'm reading directly, by the way, from the thesis. This is not paraphrasing. I like to read word for word from it. This is page 11 of the thesis, where he writes, "Respect for the rule of law over private morality and custom has been central in the history of Western civilization."
And that's true.
It has been central, but it is wrong for the government to regulate private morality. Slavery existed for hundreds of years. Banning contraception existed for hundreds of years. That doesn't make it right, just because the law is the way it is.
But unless you can put that in more context, he was stating a historical fact. He wasn't arguing anything in that particular sentence.
Well, he was, in fact. He goes on to say, and I'll right here, right under that. He says, right after saying that, he goes on to talk about what was done in the past, and he goes on to say, "It is from this historical Western model that American family law and policy has grown, and against which contemporary thinking must be compared."
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have no problem with previous thought to current thought.
Then he goes on to say, this is a direct quote, "Radical contemporary attempts at redefinition of family eliminate the requirement for legal relationships, as observed in the National Organization for Women's concept of family as, quote, people who are living together with deep commitment and with mutual needs and sharing," unquote. It's very clear that he's saying that people who live together with deep commitment and with mutual needs and sharing are not a family. He calls it a radical, contemporary attempt at redefinition of family. He goes on to say that some argue that such definition, the old definition, the colonial America definition, is archaic, and it's irretrievable nostalgia. But not Bob McDonnell. All right, he says that goes on to say the Declaration of Independence declares, and I don't think this is in the Declaration of Independence, that our concepts of rights, duties, and authority are derived from the law of nature and nature's God. It is true that Thomas Jefferson said we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. But he does not mean that, right. Go on to say that this God, this Christian God, should describe our laws, which is what Bob McDonald derives from this.
Look, you're really putting things not in the right context here. Back in the 1980s when this paper was written, that was pretty much mainstream thought at the time, that the redefinition of what a family was. We knew what a family was back in the 1980s, and it wasn't, you know, all these varied, multicolor, rainbow things. It was, you know, a mother and a father and some children and maybe a dog or a cat or something like that, and that was what a family was. And in the tragedy of divorce, where you had a single mom or a single father, you know, taking care of the kids, you know, that was still the family unit. But all of the things that we are much more open about and much more accepting of today were considered to be radical back in the 80s.
Well, Robert McDonald thinks it's still radical today.
No, this was written 21 years ago.
It was written 20 years ago, but he has not in any way contradicted when he says right here, family arises out of this divinely
created... Mark, he has said that his thinking is a work in progress still,
but
he's evolved.
It's very easy
Let's
to
look
say
at his record. Has he done anything in his record to support that kind of thing?
Yes.
No.
Yes, he has.
No.
He's had policies for covenantal marriage.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with a covenantal marriage.
That
I think that was very much the
divorce.
Mainstream thought.
And what he says very clearly here is that he doesn't think that government should in any way help single people or households of relatives or friends living together. He says that the government should discriminate in favor of married couples. He goes on, this is a direct quote from his
government book. Discriminated in favor of married couples in this country forever, for our entire history. What is so unmainstream about that?
Here's what he says. He says, family arises out of a divinely created covenant of marriage between a man and woman, the terms of which can neither be originally set are subsequently altered by the parties or the state. Single life and other households of relatives or friends living together must be regarded as a proper exercise of liberty, but there is no requirement that government promulgate policies which treat alternative lifestyle living arrangements equally with preferred traditional family.
And
in other words,
don't
he's saying that if you're single or you got a household of relatives or friends, the government should discriminate against you and discriminate in favor of married couples.
No, Mark.
That's what he's saying.
We do that now. Come on, let's look at the most obvious
one. And he's saying it's a good idea.
The most obvious one is that a young couple gets married, they start a family, they want to buy a house, they can file a joint tax return, their taxes are less for two than they would be for individuals filing, you know, separately and stuff like that. And so the government is creating an environment that is pro-family. It does not create joint tax returns for people that are not married. It does.
McDonald goes farther.
That's exactly
McDonald
what he's saying.
McDonald doesn't say that sometimes the government should discriminate in favor of marriage. He's saying that always the government should discriminate in favor of marriage. Never should they give alternative lifestyles, people like single people or people living together, the same benefits as marriage.
There was a traditional thought, which I don't think is so out of the mainstream today. There was a traditional thought that the society, through the government, had a role in promoting and preserving the social fabric of American life as we've
That's
known it
what
for
he
200
believes.
Years.
That's what
and
he believes.
I don't think that is so out of the mainstream.
Religion.
You know?
Well, you know, I mean, Osama bin Laden doesn't think it's out of the mainstream to have the government require women to wear burqas. He believes that private morality
in his country
should be enforced by the government.
In his country, it's not. Now, obviously, we would not tolerate that here, and I don't, you know, if you're implying by your silence that one of the candidates we're talking about would support that, I think you're dead wrong on that.
Well, here's what he writes, and this is on page 20 of his thesis. He writes, Republican domestic policies have demonstrated that man is capable of doing good only in an atmosphere of liberty and faith, not compulsory and atheism. He writes, this is Bob McDonald's direct words, man's basic nature is inclined towards evil, and when the exercise of liberty takes the shape of pornography, drug abuse, or homosexuality, the government must restrain, punish, and deter.
Right out of Kant, one of the most respected historical political philosophers in the history of the world.
So you're arguing
Come
the government
on, Mark.
Must restrain,
this
punish,
is,
and deter
this is
pornography and homosexuality.
This is about as mainstream historical political thought as you can get. There is just nothing
here. Is it mainstream today? Because I haven't heard Bob McDonald say he doesn't want to restrain, punish, and deter pornography or homosexuality.
It was mainstream back in the 80s. We have been evolving. We look at things differently in this society.
I don't think our Republican for governor
you know what?
Looks on it differently.
Mark,
I was
a political science major 30 years ago in school, and that's what we read of the great political philosophers of all time.
Well, you know,
man's nature is basically evil. You know who the only
you believe that?
You know who the only sniveling idiot in political philosophy who thought that that man was basically good and all we had to do was, you know, just all sit around and sing kumbaya? It was that idiot Rousseau. And you know what? He has been so discredited. Every other political philosopher that we use in Western civilization thought that man was intrinsically evil.
Well, I have to say, maybe now I understand the Republican Party more. You're the party of people that thinks people are intrinsically evil. But yeah, maybe Bob McDonald is right when he says that often the profound wisdom of God's law for the family will appear as folly to foolish men. Mm-hmm. This is a person who has his theocratic concept of God's law. He wants to impose his religion on everyone, and in that way, he is no different from Osama bin Laden.
And you know that's flatly untrue. I know we're discussing politics here,
no,
and we've all got our agenda, but look.
He wants to impose his own view of God's law.
He was doing an academic exercise 21 years ago.
You know, nowhere in this does it say it's an academic exercise.
It's a thesis. What do you think it is?
It's
an academic thesis.
Was Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto a thesis?
I don't.
Was the Declaration of Independence a thesis?
No.
These are his views.
No.
He calls it the name of this thesis, by the way, is the Republican Party's vision for the family, the compelling issue of the decade, not an academic thesis where I hypothetically consider various proposals.
Okay, well, I can tell you he did not sit down and write this on his own. He was in school. He was writing a thesis to get a degree at a Christian university.
So what you're saying is that he was dishonest and he wrote what he wrote just to please his professors.
Well, everybody writes what they write to please their professors. Come on, everybody does that.
I don't know that that's true. Some people actually write what they think.
I will confess, I wrote to please my professors.
Let me go. I got someone on the phone that wants to join in the discussion. George from Fairfax, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you. I just want one quick comment first. Your colleague there, Mr. Lane, referred to a Christian university. That sounded like an oxymoron to me. But moving along from that, it just seems like the Republican Party wants to get government involved when they want to get government involved. Normally their slogan is keep government off your back. And I have one other issue which is mainstream at the moment, which is this healthcare debate. It seems so short-sighted at the Republican platform to spend $2.2 trillion roughly a year on healthcare, when if we adopted some of these other country systems, we could save $1.5 trillion. Do they want to give away that much extra money?
Well, I could have given you more, George. I know Michael want to respond.
George, I'm disappointed you didn't compliment me on my tan. I worked hard at the beach to get this, and I know that you're a regular caller and would have thought you would have noticed.
Move
that.
Move on, Mike.
You know, there's no doubt that healthcare needs to be reformed. Republicans and Democrats know healthcare needs to be reformed. There are certain things we can agree on. There is 80% of what the House Democrats are proposing that we can agree upon. If we want to go for a limited incremental bill, I think we can get someplace and have some cost control containment elements in there. If Speaker Pelosi wants to go for the whole kahuna, then it's just not going to happen. It'll come crashing down, and I lay it at the feet of Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, and Barack Obama.
Mark, I've got to wonder, when the Republicans ran the House, the Senate, and the White House, and the judiciary, the Supreme Court, why didn't they ever think of introducing some legislation to expand that?
George, the Republicans were against Social Security. The Republicans were against Medicare. The Republicans are the party of no. They've made it very clear they prefer the status quo, and there's a reason why they prefer the status quo, because all those health insurance companies that are taking your money and charging you so much for health care give a lot of money to Republican politicians. So do the pharmaceutical companies. They are literally making money, the Republican politicians, off Americans' misery. No wonder they don't want to change health care.
George, let me correct some. Well, I'm not even going to address that
Please.
Stuff. I'm going to tell you what Republicans have been for historically. We have pushed for health care reform, even when we controlled both houses of Congress and even when we controlled the White House. The elements of historic Republican control are health savings accounts, medical malpractice reform, allowing insurance companies to compete across state lines so you get true competition, driving down the price of health care, and other expanded opportunities such as association plans and things like that. Democrats opposed us at every turn.
Actually,
then why didn't you see that when the Republicans were dominating in the 90s?
We tried to do
no
it. But Democrats opposed
any.
Us.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. Why didn't you have a law that prohibits the health insurance companies from discriminating against people with pre-existing conditions? The whole purpose of health savings accounts, let's face it, is to allow healthy people to make money while those that are sick can't get any coverage.
No.
That's the entire purpose of
the whole purpose of a health savings account is to help out the young people who don't otherwise have coverage,
right.
Who would be able
to
provide themselves with catastrophic coverage that would prevent them from going bankrupt in terms of the catastrophe, but would still allow them to pay out of pocket for routine expenses. It makes perfect sense.
It's the end of the concept of insurance entirely. Thank you for your call, George. If you want to join in, it's 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back.
I need a job.
Necesito trabajo.
I would like to speak English better.
Me gustaría hablar inglés mejor.
I want to be a U.S. citizen.
Quisiera ser ciudadano de los Estados Unidos.
For over 35 years.
Por más de 35 años.
The Hispanic Committee of Virginia has been serving our community.
El Comité Hispano de Virginia ha estado sirviendo a nuestra comunidad.
Job training and placement.
Capacitación, ayuda para conseguir trabajo.
Education for children and adults.
Educación para niños y adultos.
Immigration, naturalization, and medical referrals.
Ayuda para los procesos de inmigración y naturalización y orientación sobre médicos
are a small part of what we do.
Son solo una pequeña parte de lo que hacemos.
For help, information, or to volunteer,
para ayuda, información, o para ofrecerse como voluntario,
contact the Hispanic Committee of Virginia.
Comuníquese con el Comité Hispano de Virginia.
Helping everyone participate more fully in American society.
Ayudando a todos a participar plenamente en la sociedad norteamericana.
Would you notice if you were missing half your kidney function? According to the National Kidney Foundation, 20 million people have chronic kidney disease, and 20 million more may be at risk and not even know it. Anyone with high blood pressure, diabetes, or family history of chronic kidney disease is at risk. Early diagnosis is vitally important. To get the whole story, talk to your doctor and visit the National Kidney Foundation at kidney.org or call for a free brochure. Because when it comes to chronic kidney disease, you might not know the half of it.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. We're discussing some of what I consider to be some crazy ideas of the Republicans, including the wild ideas of the Republican candidate for governor in Virginia, Bob McDonnell. We're going over his thesis that he wrote when he was 34 years old. And here's what I find perhaps the most extreme part of the thesis. It's on page 71. I've blown it up as big as I can so people can read it, if they can. It says, while no government program can make people be good, policy should reward people when they are and not subsidize them when they're not. For example, every level of government should statutorily and procedurally prefer married couples over cohabitators, homosexuals, or fornicators.
Ooh.
The cost of sin should fall on the sinner, not the taxpayer. Now, it's interesting because Bob McDonnell recognizes that these views may not be popular in 1989. He writes, while such thinking may be attacked for lacking political realism in a changing world, it is imperative that government stand firm in support of traditional family values. The real enemies of the traditional family are materialism, irresponsibility, feminism, lust, and ultimately selfishness. So he's going to stand firm against feminism. One way, I guess, would be to make sure that women are paid less than men.
No.
Stand firm against feminism.
Absolutely
stand
not.
Firm against fornication, because people who have sex outside of marriage have to be punished, including those horrible people that have oral sex.
No, I don't think that we're talking... Look, Mark, we're getting back to the creation of the social fabric of society that we have recognized for 250 years of this country's history. You know, are we or are we not going to have policies that support, encourage, and facilitate the maintenance of the traditional family unit, such as the joint tax return, such as the home mortgage interest deduction. You know, that was originally, you know, for married people, because single people didn't have to buy houses and stuff like that.
It's not just subsidies. Restrain, and punish those that aren't in traditional marriages.
Okay.
Deter, restrain, and punish is not merely not subsidized.
Okay,
I can tell restrain, you,
that's,
punish.
That's out. That's out.
Well, that's what he said. That's his words. I didn't make up those three words.
Let's talk about the next. Scroll down a little bit more.
The part about feminism.
Part about, feminism. Okay. You know,
being a traditional enemy of
just
the...
Just scroll down and we'll look at it all. You know, where to go.
All right. Right.
There someplace.
I'm sorry. It's 71 of the PDF version. It's actually page 65 of his... here it is. The real enemies of the traditional family.
Okay. All right. The real enemies of family. Materialism. Nobody would argue about that at all. Irresponsibility.
That's capitalism. I thought they loved that kind of thing.
No, materialism and capitalism are two entirely different things.
Loving of things.
Had you gone and gotten a good education, you would know that. Irresponsibility. Oh, now there's a real controversial thing. You know.
Fine. Look at the feminism.
Lust. Lust is not a good thing.
I don't want the government regulating lust.
The
government has any role in regulating lust.
He's identifying traditional enemies of the family, and when you have a situation where people are acting out on lustful things, look.
Let's talk about feminism.
Even Jimmy Carter got in deep trouble for this particular one in his Playboy interview.
A traditional enemy of the traditional family.
Feminism, depending on how you define it, either is or is not. If you're talking about National Organization of Women in Feminism, I mean, these people are wackos, totally and completely outside the mainstream of any modern American political thought,
etc. Give me an example.
If you're talking about the concept of equal opportunity, giving everybody the chance to become fulfilled and do what they want, then that's no problem.
But Bob
McDonnell supports that because look at his record over 18 years.
Why did he make that vote in 2001?
He is a strong support. Which vote in 2001?
The vote in 2001 against pay parity for women.
Because
against pay parity for women.
He's in favor of pay parity for women.
Why did he vote the way he did it?
Because there's no way of having the state legislate it and actually measure it. It has to be done by the market. Look. We identified...
It has to be done by the market?
Yes, it has to be done by the market.
Then we shouldn't have civil rights laws at all. I mean, after all, the market can say blacks are paid less, and illegal immigrants will pay them even less. Women, we won't pay at all. Let the market decide.
Okay, you know what? We had, I think this was before you came to Washington, but we had this crazy idea that was going through the Congress back in the 80s.
Equal Rights Amendment?
No, comparable worth. Where there was going to be some bureaucrat sitting there, government-paid bureaucrat, who was going to say, well, let's see, you're a cashier at the
really
Giant, and
this
you pump gas at the thing, and those two jobs are about comparable, and so you're going to have to pay them the same thing, and it was going to create a national government pay scale.
That's not what McDonnell was talking
we
about,
We don't
Mike.
Want that, Mark.
Mike, it's easy to throw up these crazy ideas. And say, this is what Bob McDonnell said.
But that was what the Democratic Party wanted, was comparable worth.
Bob
and it's the government
McDonnell.
Sitting there deciding what your labor and my labor is worth, and you know what? I'll decide what my labor is worth, not some government bureaucrat.
Bob McDonnell considers feminism a real enemy of traditional
feminism. The National Association of Women Feminism, I mean, they're wackos. They're just not in the mainstream
of American
political thought.
You can call them names. I happened to have Marge Signer on this show just a few weeks ago.
Oh, my condolences.
And I thought everything she said made perfect sense.
No, nothing. Nothing of what she says makes any sense.
All you want. At the end of the day, you either believe in equal rights for women or you don't.
I
and
do.
Bob McDonnell does not believe in equal rights
but
for women.
You cannot,
he voted against equal rights for women.
You cannot legislate salaries. You have to have the market determine what salaries are.
Well, you know, let's talk about legislating salaries because the very first act that was legislated by this U.S. Congress under this president was the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Practices Act, where a woman was being paid less than her male counterparts for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
She brought suit under the Civil Rights Act, and a right-wing Supreme Court threw out her suit saying, well, you should have known you've been discriminated against for 30 years, and therefore you can't sue. And Congress, the Democrats, most Republicans opposing, said, you know what? She has a right to sue.
Let's not mislead our viewers. What happened was the legislation, as passed by a Democratic Congress before, very specifically gave a certain time frame in which you must file the suit. And she did not meet the statutory requirement for filing the suit. It was not a right-wing Supreme Court.
Of course it was.
It was the court saying, the Congress said you have X time. Here's your window. You didn't come through the window.
I'm going to pull rank and talk about a little law school training here, okay? The congressional statutory period was 6 months. But the law says, and this is true for any statute of limitations, in tort law, and contract law, whatever it is, if you don't know, because someone has committed fraud and has hidden the truth from you, if you don't know the facts underlying your suit, you are extended by the example. For example, if someone steals something from you, and you, for whatever reason, don't know it's been stolen from you, and you have no real reason to know, all right? And your period for suing grows by the amount that they've hidden their theft from you. In this case, you had Lilly Ledbetter's bosses hiding the fact that she was discriminated against. And that hiding, that fraud, extends the statute of limitations. It does it for tort law. It does it for contract law. The Supreme Court, it was very, very tight in ruling its decision. But here's the thing I have. If you think the Supreme Court was right, okay, I disagree, but you think they're right.
But there was a legislative
law.
There was a legislative remedy.
Exactly.
Right.
The Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Practices Act was a legislative remedy to fix this problem. It was passed by the Democratic Congress under President Obama. Why did your party oppose the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Practices Act?
Well, I don't remember the party ever taking a position on it.
The great majority of Republicans voted against it. Some voted for it. The majority voted against it. This case, by the way, happened under George W. Bush.
Okay.
They could have passed it in the last Congress.
I think the people who voted against it because they thought the current Civil Rights Act was adequate. How was it
adequate for Lilly Ledbetter, who'd been discriminated against for 30 years? How did it help her?
You know, there is a window in which you are expected to figure these things out. And even though it's extended, there is a reasonable time limitation on it. You cannot go back 30 years on something like that. There is an absolute statute of limitations.
Your party, the Republican Party, is exemplified by Bob McDonnell.
The most pro-woman candidate in the race,
who thinks
much more pro-woman than Key Deeds.
Bob McDonnell, who thinks that feminism is a real enemy of the traditional family. The Republican Party that was against equal rights amendment. He did not say wacko feminism.
Okay.
He said feminism.
It was implied.
In his view, equal rights for women is an enemy of the traditional
and
family.
And untimely selfishness and irresponsibility and materialism.
And equal rights for women. He throws it all together.
There's nothing non-mainstream about this, Mark.
I don't think it could be farther from the mainstream. Deter, restrain, and punish people for fornicating? I mean, come on.
I already tossed that one out. I said, you know, we're not going to restrain or punish anybody.
When did Bob McDonald toss it out? When did Bob McDonald say he doesn't want to punish fornicators?
He said he's moved past this stuff.
Yeah. When did he specifically say he's okay with not punishing fornicators? Because I don't remember him saying that.
I don't think anybody...
I remember him saying is that, well, he's okay with working women because, his daughter was in the army.
Here's the idea. Let's look at his 18-year record. He has introduced a plethora of bills, including when he's 4 years as Attorney General. His record is one of success. He's never introduced anything that would be even related to stuff like that. Most of his legislation passed with overwhelming bipartisan majority, including, let me say, his opponent, Creed Eads, a state senator from Bath County, who now all of a sudden has a big problem with Bob McDonald, voted for 98% of the legislation that Bob McDonald
I'm sure when Bob McDonald
voted for 98%.
I'm sure when he designated a post office. I'm sure that Creed
the
did vote for it.
The Attorney General doesn't. What the Attorney General does is he introduces legislation to prevent internet crime. He introduces legislation to make child predators, more accountable.
And the Democratic candidate
And that's
agree,
what Bob McDonald's about.
Where they both agree, then there's no issue in who to vote for. My problem is here you have a candidate who wants federal funds. He says the church can permissibly use federal funds to promote traditional family values. I don't know how he decides which church, but I don't want my money going to the Nation of Islam or going to some of these wild, crazy churches that promote whatever they promote. And furthermore, he believes that, and this is a direct quote from him, a taxation system that procures revenue based on ability to pay is socialist. He wants everyone to pay the exact same amount of taxes, whether you make $10 million dollars or whether you make nothing. He wants to ban inheritance taxes, and in fact, he is responsible for ending inheritance taxes in Virginia.
And that's a great thing. Because
it's not a good thing.
It is a great thing. But
he does not think
everybody ought to pay the same amount of taxes. That's ludicrous. If you make more money, you pay more taxes. You know,
that's not what he said.
Yes, it is. The question is, do you want to skew it so that you soak the rich at the expense of economy and creating the poor? And Bob McDonald's about jobs. Bob McDonald's about strong women. Bob McDonald's about
families. I got 50 seconds left. I'm going to read from the thesis. Quote, a taxation system that procures revenue based on an ability to pay and awards deductions and distributions based on need is socialist in its underlying philosophy and impairs the family's ability to transfer property. He thinks that a rich family should always stay rich, should never be taxed, and poor people should always stay poor. People should know their place. In Bob McDonald's world, women have to know their place. Poor people have to know their place. Everyone has to know their place in the hierarchy. That's what you get if you vote for Republican Bob McDonald.
You just argued with me that if you have something that favors married couples, that's discriminatory. We don't want to do it. And now you're arguing for discrimination based on economic need.
I'm just quoting from the manifesto of your candidate.
Bob McDonald is a jobs governor, and he's going to be great.
What he's going to do is he's going to take away your
economic opportunity for Virginians.
Mike thinks
he's a jobs guy.